My name is Jillian Flick, and I am the 2024 Global President of the Women's Energy Network, also known as WEN. WEN is a global organization of professionals working across the energy value chain who are connected locally and networked globally. This podcast is dedicated to featuring our talented WEN members in the energy community. I hope you enjoy today's episode and learn something new.
Hello again, and welcome to another WEN podcast. I'm Maggie Taliska, and today my co-hosts Beth Gould-Kreller and Cara Byrne have invited a guest speaker that will help us all think about our organizational cultures in perhaps a different way than some of us are used to by diving into the topic of psychological safety.
To tackle this somewhat nebulous but critical topic, we've invited Sean Conley, Chief Learning Leader of Baker Hughes, to explore psychological safety with us today. After 35 years of training and development experience, Sean is a true learning development specialist with a true passion for learning and living life. His global experience crosses the energy and entertainment industries in over 45 countries. And to top it all off, Sean also published his first book, Martini, in 2016. He's currently working on two new books as we speak.
I'm interested in reading that book, Sean. Martini is one of my favorite topics. Thanks, Beth, so much for that. To give a brief disclaimer, Sean and I work together, especially with the employee resource groups at Baker Hughes. He's a great ally and a person who always creates intentionally welcome and interactive work environments. When we were thinking of who could dive into the topic today, instantaneously, I thought of Sean. His team helped guide our company through a very aspirational cultural transformation, and much of the change we have seen would not have happened without some form of psychological safety in our org. I'm excited to introduce Sean to the world of WEN. So welcome to the podcast today, Sean.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here. I could not think of a better way to spend my day than, you know, having a conversation around psychological safety. So again, appreciate being here.
Well, before we get started, we'd like to learn a little bit about our guests' origin stories. Could you help us to give a little bit more of a high-level brief summary about your achievements and how you became the person you are today, and maybe why you're in the energy industry altogether?
Oh, that's a great question. So listen, I've been in the learning space for a long time, as you already mentioned, and I think it's got to be beyond 35 years now, but I'm dating myself. And had the fortunate career where I've been in different industries, right? I started off in the restaurant industry years and years ago. My folks were owner-operators. And when your folks own restaurants, you end up working in restaurants. And I thought that was going to be my whole life. And I worked at a major restaurant company in the US for about 13 years, opened up 160 something restaurants for them, kind of clawed my way up through the ranks. And then realized one day that I was tired of restaurants. I love food, but I just want to do something else. I grew up in Southern California. And when you're a learning person in Southern California, there's one place you want to go, and that was the Disney organization. So I worked real hard. That's a whole other story. Went on a bunch of interviews and finally was able to join Disney. I was there for just a short time, but it's really pivotal in my career. And, you know, that's where I really started to go, wow, there's actually a career here and there's things that you could do. And, you know, where I grew up in the restaurant industry, this is before computers and, you know, it was word of mouth, everything. And then all of a sudden you go to this organization that has like training people and documentation specialist. And I was just like a kid in a candy store. And after 6 months, I was recruited to go to another organization, which is the Universal Theme Parks at the time, by my former boss at the restaurant company I worked for. And I didn't want to go because I love the Disney brand. But then she's so nice and really a mentor to me. And she helped me with my career. So I joined Universal, spent 13 years there, various ownership, various jobs. And again, was just like, wow, this is so cool. You can help people learn and do lots of things there. NBC was acquired by General Electric way back in the day. And that's when my head exploded even more because I'm like, wow, this is an even bigger things and more to do. And I just was just learning so much. And GE actually asked me to move to London. So I spent 6 years in London where I led the international division of our learning. Came back with a transition of the organization. And after about a year of that, I decided, you know, I'd been in the restaurant space for 13 years and I was now in this entertainment space. And I thought I would just go out on my own and become a consultant. And I had no clue what I was doing, but I did it. I took a leap of faith and, you know, had a consulting business for many years that was really successful and I did well. Then I was asked by somebody else who I worked with to come and join Baker Hughes. I didn't know anything about, at that time, it was really oil and gas. And my connection was, it was through GE Oil and Gas, but I didn't know about that, but I knew that I missed being part of a team. And so I said, yes, I would go back to corporate because I wanted to be in that team environment. That's how I ended up in the energy space. It's been a transition in the organization. How I look at every job that I've had, I look at what the company does as a product. So, you know, my product now is energy. It used to be theme parks. It used to be entertainment. It used to be restaurants. And when I was a consultant, they were different products. Because I always felt that my skill was learning and I just was doing that with this particular product that I'm with. And that served me well because it keeps me fresh in learning and keeps me a learning person. And so I don't label myself as an energy person or a theme park person. I'm just a learning person who's happened to have really cool jobs that I worked through the ranks of. But I'm just someone who's passionate about learning and growing myself. And if I can share that with other people, it seems to work.
One thing I'm interested to understand is why energy? I mean, you mentioned a colleague reached out to you, but I'm sure you had to weigh that decision. That's quite a different sector to jump from one to the other. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. What went into that decision? And then as you've been in energy for a while, are there any similarities you can see, you know, that common thread of learning across sectors? Yep. Are there any common examples maybe you could give us that would be insightful?
I love it. It's a great question because I sometimes ask myself too, how did you get here? How did you end up in energy? Because it's so different. But to me, that's part of the excitement. Part of the excitement is learning different businesses and how they operate. And when I think where my eyes really opened up is when I was consulting, because I had so many clients that worked from hotels, airlines, you know, tech companies. I could take the same thing that I do, learning, and I could apply it to different places. So I saw it as just an exciting opportunity. And truly, it helping me get back to my love of being on a team with other people. And there are similarities. And this might sound really corny, but the similarities are people. You still have in every business, you know, sales and commercial, procurement, you name it, they're all there, right? We just do it with a different product. That's really it. And so it's that understanding that in the learning world, or in my space, it's about the people. And whatever you do and wherever you're working, it's people that make that product. And so that's the similarity. Every business, you know, needs sales and every business has to grow. But it takes the development of people to bring out the best in those organizations. And so that common thread always to me is the people.
So I want to get into your book. And speaking of energy as our topic, I have a couple of chemistry degrees. So I put a lot of energy into my drinks. But your book is called Martini, and I love that. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And I understand you have a couple more books on the way. Can you tell our listeners about those books?
I'm an overachiever, and that's my whole thing. So yes, listen, I self-published this book called Martini, and it came from my love of drinking martinis back in the day. And it's really funny because I would take pictures just on my phone of the martinis. I thought they were beautiful. And I had the luxury of traveling all over the world and working out. So you'd go to an airport and I'd order something. I'd take a picture and then I'd go somewhere else and take a picture. And I had a friend of mine, who's a really good friend of mine. We were just talking. He's like, these pictures are really pretty. He's like, why do we turn them into a book? And I thought, like, really, how do you do that? And he's like, it's easy. So I just gave him all the pictures and he made this beautiful coffee table book of beautiful martinis that I was impressed with. I'm like, wow, those look pretty good. And what we did is we just ended up kind of putting where they were at the bottom of them. And then I threw in, because I thought, well, that's not really anything people would be interested in. So then I just put in kind of what I call Seanisms. And I just put little quotes behind some of them. So it'd be like, hey, this is a martini at X airport or X location. And then I would just say like a quote, I'd make something up and we print those on there too. And that's really what it was. The funny part was, is I had no intention of doing anything with it other than just getting a couple copies and putting them on my coffee table. But then people started going, oh, wait, that's really pretty. Can I get one? So then I just ordered copies. And, you know, we went and we approached a couple big places and they were like, you know, it was a fortune. You had to pay up front because I was nobody. And so I'm like, well, just do it myself, which seems to be the story of my life. Just figure it out, right? And so, like, listen, I think I ended up selling, it's not a ton of them, but a couple thousand copies, which is kind of fun. And I gave a lot of them away and, you know, all that stuff. But it's something that the day I got the books delivered, it was one of those moments where you're like, wow, I can call myself an author now, even though it's pictures. But that led me to kind of what I've been working on, my other two passion projects. And to be honest with you, I've been working on it for a long time. And I'm like, next year. But I'm really taking it serious now because I think there is a message. And so there are two things that I'm working on. One is really about helping bring up creativity in people. It's based on something I created called the Big Idea Generator, which is just a way to brainstorm. So there's a kind of a how-to on that one that I'm working with my mentor on that. And then the other one, I don't know if I should tell you the title yet. I'm going to hold off on the title because it'll keep people going like, what is the title? But I will just tell you, it is really irreverent. And it's awesome. But what I'm writing about is really how to bring passion to what you do and, you know, how you show up and how you walk into a room and how you can be a little bit different. Okay, wait, should I tell you the title? Okay, it's called Passionate Hookers. That's what it is.
And that's awesome.
Love it.
Exactly, right? It gets a reaction, but it's how do you hook people with passion? That's what it is. And that's really what I had that title like for years, and I have to get this together. And every time I say it to people, like, you get that reaction of like, what? That's what it's about, though. It's really how do you, you know, show up and live a life. It started off from just kind of being presentation skills, but I'm turning it into more of a kind of lifelong lesson of just showing up. Because, you know, there's a lot of people that don't show up with passion. And you get lost. And so if you have a little bit of passion, and passion looks different to different people, it doesn't have to be loud and outgoing. There's different types of passion. But if you have that spark, you will show up differently. And that's really the goal of all of this.
I love that. So you had the Seanisms, you've got the awesome titles for all of you. I mean, Martini alone got me caught with your first book. So I'm looking forward to the other two books you have coming. I've had the privilege of being able to work with you, so I know how engaging you are, intentionally engaging and bringing the audience into everything that you do. But I think the number one thing that I've been most impressed with working with you is the tone of the environment that you set when we have learning opportunities with you or your team or within the entire company. And I do think the foundation of that is the psychological safety that we try and create and foster within the company. How about we just start simple and define what is psychological safety for our listeners? What is it to you, John?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it is really a kind of a buzz topic these days, but it's really been around all the time. It's just now we're kind of calling it something. But to me, at the end of the day, and I'm glad that you said what you said, Cara, because if it comes across to people that you have passion and that you create an environment, that's what I'm trying to do. And that's really what's, you know, psychological safety is to me. And with the team, I work with a wonderful team of people. But at the end of the day, it's that belief in saying to people, like, is it okay for me to speak up and to be myself, express my thoughts, express my concerns in front of other people? Can I admit my mistakes? Can I say I screwed up on things without that fear of being like negatively labeled or having negative consequences? But it's that real permission to show up, in my opinion. And you do that in an environment that you feel comfortable doing it in, right? People, you know, we often sit back, and I say this a lot, like, there's a lot of passengers, right? What we want as pilots, I want you to fly the plane. I want you to sit, although it's fun to sit in the plane, you know, and do whatever, but part of you that wants to step up, but you feel comfortable stepping up. And, you know, you mentioned the ERGs earlier. Those are a great place for organizations, and most organizations have, you know, resource groups. But we do those in many cases because people don't feel comfortable. And so we have to give you a place to go where you can feel comfortable. And I think that's so valuable. But how awesome will it be that one day you can kind of just strip all those away and just say, this is, we're all here, we're all human, and we're all trying to do something. And I don't have to worry because I've got you, you've got me. And that will change to me the workforce. And maybe it sounds like, you know, pie in the sky and it's not achievable, but I think it is. I think it comes from a will and a willingness of people to just be okay being who you are and being authentic in who you are.
Sean, you mentioned this has been around for a while. We just are starting to hear more and more the term psychological safety and the concept. Why do you think it's been more popular recently?
You know, boy, that's a loaded question, but I think it's, to me, because society has changed so much. And I think a lot of this stems from what we've all gone through in the last several years with the pandemic and financial crisis in the globe and political climate in the world as well. And I think what it's done is it's people have reverted in many ways. And there's impacts in the workplace, right? And when you start to look at some of the movements that we have and the great work that we do around DEI, this is just to me an offshoot of all of that, that just says we have all of these things because it's the tide has changed. And there's so much division around, and it shows up in businesses, right? And so because of that, we don't feel comfortable. And so, I mean, I don't know if that's the right answer, but it's, to me, it's kind of what's happened. It's just this evolution. We've always been trying to hopefully create environments that people feel comfortable and safe and you can be authentic. But I just think it's been highlighted so much in everything that we've gone through. And it's kind of like those pendulums, right? We swing one way and then we swing the other way. And I think we're just trying to get the balance right. And, you know, it's just kind of, it's been festering for a long time. And I would imagine people who are listening to this can relate to, you know, even feeling like their voices don't matter at times. And so we call it psychological safety. But I think it's just really come to the forefront in light of so many things that have been happening in the world lately.
Well, and it's almost like when one voice gets louder, you need that counter voice to get louder as well to, like you say, balance out that pendulum and that swing that's happening. And whether it's talked about explicitly or it's just part of everyday culture, it's always been there. It's just now we have a term that we use out loud constantly about it.
Exactly. We can call it something now, right? And it's always been there, but you're absolutely right. It's those louder voices. And I think it's great to have loud voices, but it's also great to have soft voices. And it's just the difference, right? And we have to be able to respect that. You know, it's funny, we mentioned kind of brainstorming. I was talking about that book I'm working on. This will make sense, but classic brainstorming doesn't work because classic brainstorming is where the loudest person shouts out answers, right? And it works for that person or if you're the boss, because the boss says something and people go, oh, that's a really great idea. We knew you were smart, but that's it. Those are loud voices, right? You get so much more innovation and creativity when you can brainstorm and hear everybody's voices. And to me, that's a great analogy for psychological safety, right? It's great if you want to be loud, but we need to be able to hear from everybody. And everybody needs to be able to speak. And I might not speak as loud as you, but you need to hear my voice. And I need to feel comfortable doing that. And to me, that's kind of that core of what we're talking about here as, you know, a psychological safety as a topic.
Well, it's interesting to have that context of the macro kind of moves as to why is this at the forefront right now? But, you know, we like to give our listeners some takeaways from our episodes. And I think I love everything that you're saying. You know, I think it's amazing to create a safe space and kind of celebrate differences and, you know, enable people to be their more authentic self. You're going to get a more productive team. And a lot of us in our roles either manage teams, we participate on teams. Sometimes we're on cross-functional teams that have a whole different, you know, battery of skills and skill levels. And I like how you mentioned there's the people that speak loudly, the people that speak softly. How do you enable psychological safety when you're dealing with so many different skills, different backgrounds, a different pecking order even? Are there some kind of broad stroke enablers that we can kind of take away and practice on our own?
Yeah, 100%. I really, really think you can. And a few things that kind of come to mind is Number one to me is leading by example. Whether you're a people leader or people on a team, right? I think we need to really be an example of this, which means awareness, having the awareness to understand how important all of this is. So one thing is really being an example. And I don't think you have to be a team leader to set an example. Sometimes the employees need to set examples for their leaders. And I think that's really great. I think we also have to really take a deep dive and look at our working environment, our work culture, our company cultures, and be honest with ourselves and say, you know, is our current culture supporting this? Are we letting people do this? How are we running our meetings? So look at the culture, look at yourself there. And then, you know, some basic things you can do is encourage people to speak up. And so you don't do that by saying, hey, you talk, George, your fingers. You do it by saying, I would love to hear from everybody. And I'd love to hear your voice. And so when you're ready, you know, those kind of ways, but create an environment to encourage people to do it. And sometimes it takes a little bit of work because so many times people have been beaten down or so insecure that we have to kind of get them to a place where they're comfortable. But that comes with, again, culture and understanding that. It comes with you leading by example, but also to really, really encourage everybody that more voices and hearing from everybody is such a benefit. It doesn't mean that every idea or everything that we say is going to be something we implement, but it gives us a chance. And we start to create that environment. It fosters the feeling that people can speak up. I think, you know, another thing that we can do is not be so quick to judge, which we are constantly, right? That's just kind of that human nature. It's always going on ahead because we tend to not really listen, but just wait for our turn to talk. But if you really listen and you can ask yourself, huh, I'm learning something here. I'm trying to understand from this person. And even if it's something that sounds crazy or different or whatever, it's just new, it's different. And so really suspending judgment. And to me, that's super hard because we live in a world that's like this, you know, we're fast, 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 fast. And as you know, you hear like, oh, we've done that before. That's not going to work. That's not called suspending judgment. It's like, what if it worked? How could we? Maybe we haven't tried it the right way. So I think, you know, that piece of it there. I also think another way to really create an environment or create more psychological safety is gratitude and kindness, you know, to say thank you to people. And even if the idea or whatever we're talking about isn't right, but to let people understand why. But thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. That's really important. I'm glad you spoke up. But you're creating new behaviors by encouraging people to do things and to speak up and then recognizing when they do it. It stems from building trust in a team and in a culture there. So, you know, and trust is a loaded topic. We could spend days talking about that. But you know, gratitude, trust, being an example, checking the current climate there. And I will just say kind of maybe one more thing, and then I'd love to hear anybody else's ideas, but I think you got to be a better listener to people. We get the communication balance wrong because we live in a tell world versus a listen world. And a way to create more psychological safety is to listen to people and seek to understand versus seek to judge, and it will help. And by no means am I perfect at this. I'm a work in progress, 100%. But I talking about this and listening to podcasts like this, it's always a constant reminder that I have work to do, and if I work on me, it helps other people. And so if we all started to believe the importance of voices and authenticity and letting people show up, and we just talk about it, as hard as it might be, just talk about it. You're starting to create a safe environment. You're building trust. And so it's just a lot of conversations and role modeling and being willing to admit your mistakes creates a safe environment for others.
I think it also would stem back to, so you say trust, you say gratitude, you know, the willingness to listen, I think are all key things, but also the willingness to have grace for each other, to allow for those mistakes. and the patience to work through it. You mentioned perfectly, we are a tell and we are a action-oriented society right now. I think if we don't do something, I mean, half of us have to practice just being okay with doing nothing, you know, as like, that is consciously what I am working on right now, is it's okay to be doing nothing. And so many people freak out when there is the space to brainstorm and truly brainstorm, listening to everybody, that I think that those are concepts that maybe our culture or just the way things are right now, we tend to skip over that part of it. And I think grace became really huge during the pandemic. But as we are starting to move back out into society and things are reverting back to where they may have been prior to the pandemic, people are forgetting to give grace. They're getting less forgiving. They're getting less respectful. It's always similar, going to be a pendulum, but having that grace is something that's really important too.
I just want to add on to that because I think it's so important. If you think that the pandemic taught us so many things, and you, not to make light of how challenging and difficult and horrible it was, but if you think about the early onset there, we were different humans after we got through the hoarding toilet paper part, right? Where it was just like, what is happening here? But when we got to the part where people, we became kind of one, there was this collective unity. It was based though from fear, right? Because it's fear of the unknown and we didn't know. But if you remember those days, though, when you were hearing people like banging pots and pans outside, at, you know, to
I was just thinking of that in New York City. Yeah.
You're supporting the community and the healthcare workers. And we had this collective, like, we can do this and this is horrible and we're there. And again, it doesn't matter what people believe or anything like that. It's just we all went through it, right? And then we created these new habits. And we created some really good habits. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, it's all good, move on. And how soon we forget, right? And you go right back to those old behaviors. So we were doing this stuff pre all of the pandemic and everything. And we thought we were gonna get it, but then human nature takes over. And again, the world takes over and you got politics and finance and work and, you know, and a lot of stuff happening. And we forgot that. And that's exactly why we talk about things like this. It's like, we know how to be kind. We know how to be human. We inherently know that everybody's voices should be heard. But then we let all these other forces, call it work, call it whatever, make you busy and make you forget these kind of things. And so we need to constantly remind people. And this is not like a podcast or anything that we do on just like, oh, it's just a feel-good stuff. These are real things. And this is important because there are benefits to this. If you get this right, there are benefits to the individual, there's benefits to the other people, but there's benefits to the organization. And you can't deny that if we hear from everybody, we show up differently, it improves innovation. There's no question. You are far more creative and innovative when you hear from other people, right? It fosters, you know, collaboration and breaking down silos, which is what you want in an organization. It helps people show up in a much better space where you can be yourself and be happy when you're in this environment that we spend a lot of time on, right? It helps us be more productive because you want to work harder when you're working for something in a way that your voice is heard. You know, those are all things that are really great. And I can't help but think, doing that helps us attract talent, retain talent, you know, which is what every organization wants. So while it sounds like, yeah, just be nice to people, it's more than that. It's helping create that environment that people can be themselves. And when I'm like that, it makes me want to be here and work harder and do more and create more and to be part of something that's bigger than me. And you know, that's what we're trying to accomplish. And I think there's, you know, we need more dialogues like this because it helps people. It's a nice reminder. I'm on my soapbox now.
I like your soapbox. I'm taking it all in. I was just wondering, I mean, you know, we have seen backlash against DEI in the United States. I don't know that that's necessarily global. We have seen it locally. I don't know how much that's penetrated our industry, but do you think there's things we could do as an industry to do better, to enable authentic self, to enable, you know, safe spaces for dialogue and recognizing differences. Do you think as an industry, and I know our industry is pretty broad, are there any broad stroke things you think we could focus on?
And it's a great question. One of the things that I would think of is remind yourself how cool it is what you do and what we do, right? And y'all asked me earlier, like, how did I get to this space? I, you know, just kind of fell into it, but I've learned to really admire and appreciate the energy space, right? Whatever sector you work in. But the thing that I have learned, and it's funny, I amazed myself a couple months ago because I was invited to speak at a conference and you know, talk about what I do. And I was listening to myself going, wow, you're pretty good. You do understand this business. And it surprised me that I could actually put the dots together because I for years couldn't figure out, like, I don't know what we do. It's just energy stuff. But now what I truly believe and how I sell it to people is, like, you know, we make the world happen. We make the world better, right? And as we transition, whatever that looks like, everybody uses and needs energy, what we do, right? And so I think one way you create a better working environment is to remind yourself what you do. It is bigger than that thing in front of you. It's bigger than that switch or that project or that little thing that you do, thing that you're selling. It's, you're creating a place for the world to happen. And that's pretty cool to me. But we forget that because we go back to our old habits, right? We're busy. I got to do things. I got pressures. I got sales. I got all that kind of stuff to do. And we forget, why do we do what we do? And I think if we remind ourselves that, it's a step in the right direction, right? It's a step to say, if I truly believe that I fit into this place to make the world better, to provide energy to people, that's cool. But guess what? All of these other people are doing it with me. And wow, if we treat everybody, you know, kindly and let people show up and be themselves, we can do it together versus it feels like me against everybody else. And so I think it's just reminding yourself, what do you do and why do you do it? And if you're not happy, do something else. It's okay. It's a big world out there. But no reason to not be happy. And, you know, we all go through change and transformation. And don't get me wrong, working environments are tough these days. There's so much happening. And, you know, companies transforming and changing and reductions and sales pressures, like, that's all real business. But it shouldn't stop you from being who you are and being, you know, part of something bigger.
So, Sean, after our prep call, I connected with you on LinkedIn, and my LinkedIn feed is a lot more fun these days because you're very active on social media. I love the Seanisms. I love the content that you're posting. Social media has gotten a bad rap in society. Do you think it's possible to create a psychologically safe environment there? And what are your thoughts on the different platforms? Are some more safer than others?
That's a great question. And last year, it was February last year, I got off of all social media purposefully. And so I don't have any of those accounts anymore. I have LinkedIn. That's the only one. This is not a plug for LinkedIn, but it's the only social media I have because, you know, it's business related. And I still know what's going on and, you know, just, you know, like, still, just, you know the world and things that are happening there and with plenty of people who are there. But I'm off of all other social media just for the reasons that I think you said, right? It's, well, it's two reasons. One reason, everything, they were just, it was all sales. After a while, I was like, I'm not even connecting with my friends anymore because there's so many ads here. So I'm like, I cannot be bothered by that. And so I just decided to get off of all those kind of things. But I chose to keep LinkedIn because I think that's an important business platform. And I choose to see it like that. I was not a year ago really good at LinkedIn and then took an honest effort to be better at that and actually had some help. And, you know, M. Wilson, and we brought her in to help us, well, help me first to kind of look at LinkedIn in a different way. And then I had her do some training with our team and then various other folks there. But it's great resources. Sometimes you just need a great resource and a great teacher to help you with things. But then I started to learn how I can use my voice in a platform that is really conducive to the world I choose to live in, the business world and things like that. And so it's been really fun. It's taken quite some time, but I had to be, you know, it's like learning anything, to be dedicated and really focused on it, understand the algorithms, understand how things work. But it's kind of cool now because I am so glad that you're on my LinkedIn, but I've learned a lot, but I learned from other, but I'm asking questions for people. I post things that are important to me. And that's just what I choose to do because it's my voice and, you know, to let my voice be heard. So, you know, I'm not really on all the other platforms. I've never been on TikTok. I don't know how it works. I'm old. So, you know, all that kind of stuff. But I used to be on Facebook. Then people made fun of me anyways because they're like, nobody's on that anymore. I'm like, but there's billions of people. But I just chose not to get into that environment anymore. This was just too much. And it was taking me away from everything else. Nothing wrong with it if that's what people want to do. But I dedicated myself on something else that I feel is a business platform that I could kind of play around with. And it's been kind of fun. And I earned like a top voice badge on like various things. And randomly, you're like, how'd I get that? Because, you know, you start to play in the profile and play in the system. And it's great. But what's really cool about, to me, social media, or in this case, LinkedIn, is I'm able now to hear from other people. I ask a lot of questions on LinkedIn to get people to respond, and you create these conversations. And so it's kind of fun because I, you know, recently have been on this kind of 2024 empathy kind of, it's my new thing. And it's really ties in, I think, to psychological safety. But I'm wondering if that might be my new kind of, maybe I'm going to change what I'm writing about. I don't know. I haven't thought it all out, but I'm like, wow, there is really something to be said for this, because I did a post recently and the numbers, at least for me, like, I'm sure there's other people that have way bigger numbers, but for me, it was like my biggest post and the most reactions, but it was about empathy. And I was so, I don't know if I was surprised or not surprised, but so many people seem to resonate with that topic. And so now I'm just kind of keeping that going, seeing how I can play around with that. But I just think it ties nicely to this.
You are intentional about how you use social media. And if we all take some form of intentionality into what we do out there, then there is a way that we can impact the world and the industry around us and the platforms that we operate within. And yes, there's always going to be people that you may choose not to engage with, or bots that you choose not to engage with. That happens. But ultimately, you can create your own universe there. And the bigger your universe becomes, the more influence it has. And therefore, you can create that psychologically safe environment for others. Social media is a little bit interesting because it could take on a life of its own. But that's because people use it unintentionally. Right. And the intentionality is what brings it forward, in my opinion. I actually wanted to ask you a little bit about, you were mentioning something earlier about cycles of work and like we have growth, we have reductions, we have great financial times, struggling financial times, got political climates, you know, that go in and out, everything like that. I feel like when an industry has growth, you can breathe a little bit. Right? You have some space to try new things. But once we start to get busy or we're going through another cycle of reductions, our focus changes, right? And it changes away sometimes from the organizational decisions that we have, whether it be the themes of psychological safety or authentic leadership or whatnot there. So I'm just curious, how do you, I know part of it is becoming habitual, right? You need to build it into your everyday work. So that way you don't turn away from it. So maybe, do you have some tips on how to continue to build it in to become habits? I know we can start being empathetic, we can start being great listeners, but how do we sustain it over a period of time?
It's like everything, you know, it is habits, right? And habits are formed when we repeat behaviors. You know, there's always that like, how many days does it take to create a habit? I think the answer is until you create the habit, you know, it's there you go. But I think the way you do it is start with yourself, like self-compassion, and ask yourself, am I speaking up in the right way? Am I letting other people speak up? Am I creating that environment? So I just think you can only start with yourself. But if you do that, you're in the steps in the right direction, right? But I don't know any other way to do it than just say, am I part of the problem or am I part of the solution? And, you know, as organizations do go through change and there's so much happening, right? It brings out fear in people typically. And when that strikes us as people, then what we do is we tend to like try to protect ourselves. And I'm like, I'm going to try to look better than you. And that's how we do it. That's just kind of what a lot of, you know, human behavior is. And so if you can start with yourself and say, it doesn't matter what's going on around me, I can still be kind to people. I can still really listen to people. I can still ask questions and be curious about other people. I think curiosity has been lost, but curiosity helps with, you know, psychological safety. Help me understand that. That's really interesting. I saw it in a different way. Help me see how you see it. That's being curious. And so, you know, work on those kind of things. Work on being more curious and work on listening. And I think you can get there. But it's practice. And, you know, the first thing that goes out the window are all these things, because we get right back into business and boom, boom, boom. And I got to protect myself. That's all right. But you can still do that in a way that helps other people and creates an environment. So, you know, to change all that stuff, cells and the pressures, but just change the outcome, how you do it.
Play devil's advocate a little bit here. You can change things, and eventually, if everyone else isn't changing around you, sometimes you feel like you're hitting a brick wall, and so then it starts working against you, right? Like you're trying to be this person, you're trying to do that. How can we hold others accountable, or can we? And what do you do when you run into that situation?
As people leaders, if that's what we are, right, at times, I think you have an obligation, though, to not tolerate negativity. And so that comes down to being a better coach and to provide feedback and to be honest about that. We don't do that really well in a lot of organizations. We don't really coach people well. We don't provide real feedback. But I think you do have a obligation to do that, right? And that's part of that evaluating your environment and leading by example. So one, yes, I think there is a duty for people to do it. But the other thing is, you know, I don't try to change anybody. It's not why I'm here. It's not my job, right? You be you, I'll be me. It's all good. I just want to do it in a way that's beneficial for all of us there. But there are times, though, that you might have to ask yourself those tough questions. We always have choices, right? And that's kind of what life is, just a bunch of choices we get to make. And at some point, you might have to make a choice that says, this isn't the environment for me. This isn't allowing me to be who I want to be. And it's not a safe environment for me. I don't feel comfortable. And maybe my choice is to go someplace else. That is a personal choice that people make. So, you know, think about that. But your choice could also be, I'm going to have some conversations and I'm going to try again. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to build trust. But it's those choices. And, you know, sometimes you bang your head against the wall and finally it hurts so bad, you're just like, I can't take it anymore. Don't become part of the problem. Just make a better choice. That's all.
But I think what you said is really key. You can't change people. And you're the chief learning officer, right? Like, if you can't change people, all you can do is give them new skills and hope that they apply them in the right way. And they leverage who they are to be a better business person or to be a better person or whatever it is. And everyone's definition of better is different. Everyone's definition of success is different. But that doesn't matter. As long as you have the skills and you're intentionally trying to work towards a safe environment that everybody can thrive in some way, shape, or form.
100%.
It's interesting you're talking about, you know, giving people new skills. And I think in a lot of our organizations, we learn new skills to solve problems for continuous improvement. And in those skills, like Six Sigma and the Define, you know, you're showing the problem, that you're addressing the why. Why do we care about this? Same thing with design thinking. You know, you ask, why are we doing this? But Sean, I remember back to our prep call and you were talking, you had just come from a goal setting exercise for 2024 and you made a really good point. You said, we forgot the why of the goals. Can you dive into this a little bit more? Why is it important to discuss the why? And we do it every day in our problem solving, our continuous improvement efficiency measures, but we don't do it when we set our goals.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, somebody already coined that start with why, and it was genius, right? And it's great, but it's that whole thing. It's just habits. We just do these things. Like every year, you gotta do the stuff, set your goals. Listen, I've been around a long time, and I can think of so many businesses that I've been in myself, that I go through all the effort, set the goals, do what I'm supposed to do. And you know, when we talk about it next year, at goal setting time. And so, and I know people like will be like, oh no, that doesn't happen here. Yes, it does. You know, because this is where it is. It's just, that's just it, admit it, right? So that to me is the whole point. The point is that we got to give us a reason. Why are we doing what we're doing? And have real conversations like, listen, we're setting these goals to help us get here, to go there, to do this. But then don't put them in some system and never look at them. Use them. And if they're not valuable, then don't do it. And I'm not going to say that in my career many years ago that maybe I just cut and pasted some of my goals and changed the dates and numbers, right? Because I knew nobody looked at it. I don't do that anymore. Or wait, I never admitted that I did it. So anyway, some other people may have done that. But you know what I mean? It's like, if it's not important, then don't do it. You know, it's the same with, you know, like New Year's resolutions and stuff, right? Most of them don't succeed because they don't mean anything to you. It's just like a kind of a, why do we do what we do? Why is this important? What are we trying to accomplish? How are we trying to get there? And a goal is just kind of that, let's keep going in this direction here. You know, call it whatever you want, but let's get everybody moving in the same direction to do the same thing, to create a better world through energy, whatever it might be. So I just think, like, I'm a fan if you want to set goals, but use them, right? Otherwise, it's just a silly game that we play, and it makes us feel good because I said, you know, check the box and you did that, and it's in a system, but, you know, use them. Learning is about behavior change. And so that's what I'm in the business of, helping people change behaviors, right? And so all we do in learning is provide the vehicle to do it, but you have to do something with it. And that's the difference there, is we, you know, we provide the place and the information, but at some point you got to do something. And I would imagine, you know, these calls or these podcasts, I asked this question. I had a group earlier today that I was talking to, and I always ask people the same question. What is the easiest thing to do after you listen to a podcast like this, or after you go to a training session, whatever it might be? The easiest thing to do was nothing. And, you know, that's what this podcast is about, right? If you're listening to this right now, you have a choice to make. When this call ends or when this podcast ends, you have a choice. It's your choice to say, I'm going to create a more psychologically a safe place for other people and for myself. Or you can do what 99% of people do, and that's nothing. It's super easy. It requires no effort and no degree. But do something. That will change it. So same with goal setting, same with anything. You're going to do it, but do something with it, right? Because it's so easy to do nothing. It's so easy to sit back and point the finger and say, well, they have to create an environment that's safe, or the company has to do it, or that over there, or this group over there. Own it. It's easier not to. But if you own it, you'll be part of the change, a part of the solution.
I think you've given us our marching orders. Like there's a true call to action there. We don't want to be the 99%. We want to do something when we hang up the call and turn off the podcast.
I was just going to say, I'm so sorry. I was going to say, and I would love to hear what people do, right? So find out all of us on LinkedIn and tell us what you're doing. Like, that'd be so cool. It's like, yeah. Here's what I'm doing.
I need to follow you on LinkedIn. It sounds like it would, it'd be a breath of fresh air on my feed to see some of this. And Maggie's like, yes, follow on LinkedIn. Well, you know, this has been a breath of fresh air in my day. I've truly appreciated, you know, getting to know you a bit. But one thing, we can't let you off easy. So all of our guests, we do end things on a fun note, and we ask just some silly questions, and they're not meant to be mind benders, just whatever pops into your head initially, just go with it. So Maggie, why don't you start us off with a fun question?
All right. Question one, if you could share a meal with anyone living or dead, who would it be? And it can be an individual, it can be a group, anyone.
You got it. Sentimental answer would be my dad. He passed away when I was younger, so I think that'd be great. But I would love to have dinner with Padma Lakshmi, because I'm obsessed with every celebrity cooking show out there. And she's really cool. And I love her how she uses spices. And I think that'd just be so fun. So Padma, call me dinner.
That's awesome.
He won't pack his knives and go, Padma.
Yeah.
There you go.
Put it out in the ether. It'll happen. Okay, I have a question for you, Sean. Karaoke. What's your favorite karaoke song?
Okay, can I switch that? I'll tell you the song I will never sing again at karaoke. And it's called Wannabe by the Spice Girls?
Oh, yeah.
Because only reason is because I just thought it was like, there's a few lyrics, like, you know, super, super easy. But then you get into, I was like, Zikazama? I sang it years ago with one of my classes and I'm like, oh, dude, karaoke, and we did it. And I'm like, where are all these other words coming from? I just thought it was just tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Like, I thought that was the whole song. I'm like, there are lyrics beyond that, and it's completely lost. So I wouldn't sing that one. Great song, but won't sing it.
That's all right. None of us are, but everybody dreams that they're a rock star at some point. All right, my question. If you had a warning label, what would yours say?
I'll give you two. One, you know that little, on that those warnings where it has like the wire thing on there and it's like flammable or something like that. So I might use that. I got some hot ideas like that. Like there's this fire and passion. Or I would also use the complete opposite, which is handle with care. So you can pick either one of those. But I think that's kind of that. I would either go like you're just out of control fiery or just be gentle.
Okay, last question. What has been on your mind recently that you hope to share with our listeners?
It's the lighting on my wing light. This is so sad. I know you wanted probably a more provocative answer, but like I can't figure out how to put the wing light in the right spot so that I look really good on camera. It's like, and somebody's like, Sean, maybe you don't look good on camera. I don't know. You know, it's over here, the side of my face, over there. I can't do it. So I give up. I give up on that.
Lighting is very complicated.
It's an art form. And I'm like, I haven't figured it out. And I grew up in Hollywood, so I could do better. If anybody would like to give me a ring light tutorial, please do.
Exactly. I was going to say, you could check out YouTube or somebody else could step up to the task. Well, Sean, I am super excited to have introduced you in more than just words, because you were introduced last year in the last publication of our Empower magazine, because we introduced CORE, which is a self-learning platform, to the entire Women's Energy Network. And now I've gotten to introduce you personally to them. So thank you so much. We'll make sure to put a link to your website and your LinkedIn profile in the episode notes so that everybody can connect with you and follow the empathetic conversation that we're having, the empathy conversation that we're having online. But also, just in general, I feel like I learned something from you, new from you every single week. So thank you so much for just being who you are. And thank you for spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation. This really means a lot. And I really appreciate being here.
It's great talking with you. Thank you.
Thanks.
My name is Alicia Taylor, and I'm the 2024 WIN Global Conference Director. We're excited to announce that this year, the conference is heading to Atlanta, Georgia, where we will enjoy some Southern hospitality, celebrate WIN's 30th anniversary, and unpack the future of energy with industry experts, leadership coaches, and inspirational keynote speakers. Come join WIN members from across 25 chapters as we gather to envision what's next. So buy your tickets or become a conference sponsor today by visiting our website at www.womensenergynetwork.org. Mark your calendars for this must-attend event, April 28th through the 30th, 2024. I hope to see you in Atlanta.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Until next time, take care.